College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and the family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
Completely disgusting. They've left a young man here who's obviously been hurt. How badly, I don't know, but...
Hurts nothing. Pain's nothing. Mulligan. Windham. You got a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. I heard Blackjack Mulligan talk about that barbed wire was meant to keep critters and animals in. Mulligan... Abuda Dean himself knows you're the master of the wire. I'm no fool. Believe me, Mulligan. Someone's going to get hurt in that ring. And I know I'm going to get hurt. I know Maya Singh's going to get hurt. I know you're going to get hurt. But I know your young boy is going to be hurt extremely hard.
Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Sullivan. There's a reason for putting some kind of an enclosure around the ring anytime you get in there, because you seem to take the battle, and the battles always seem to erupt and go outside the ring. In fact, this past week we had an incident that I certainly think bears watching.
15 police cars. Yeah, it was an incident. Show them. Go ahead.
All right, now. appears obvious now that Kendall is certainly holding his own.
Hey. There's the head of the family down and bleeding.
Hey.
Okay, there's a Kendall Windham, and he is still wearing that neck brace, just like everybody else has. And right here, Mayor Singh is going to put the coup de grace. But Black Jack Mulligan, the head of the family, comes hooping and hollering in. Black Jack, I have more tricks up my sleeve than that. I haven't chewed on a beetle nut for a long time, but I intend to before I meet you guys again.
Well, obviously, here's what I'm talking about. You're outside the ring. Now you're outside the barrier. And this battle goes straight out into the street out on the Kennedy Boulevard, I might point out.
As you can see, I've got a tactical approach here. I'm trying to bring him outside so I can find something to really hurt this boy. Take a look at his back. I did that to him earlier. Cage, barbed wire, anything the Mulligans and Windhams want. I've been used to beating them up, as you can see right there. There's that blackjack. Who the hell do you think you are, Mulligan, anyway? You're the head of the family.
Well, it's gone out into the street, and this point in time, it has obviously definitely gotten out of control.
Well,
so a barbed wire or the steel cage is the only answer.
Well, let me tell you one thing, Mulligan. Who the hell do you think you are? You think you're going to save everybody? You think you're going to save everybody that ever came to Florida? You better save yourself, and you can't barbed wire cages. It's right up my alley because on the 13th step of the 13th pyramid, when I ate that cosmic cookie, brother, it changed me for good.
I have some very special guests with me here today. Trudy Hurd, who is a journalist with Sports Review magazine, and she is here on a special mission, and that is to award Kendall Windham an award for being Wrestler of the Month. And here is father, Blackjack Mulligan, is here with him. And Kendall, is quite an honor. And Judy, what do you have? Trudy, I'm sorry. What do you have to say about this?
On behalf of Sports Review magazine, I am very proud to give you this plaque for Wrestler of the Month. This qualifies you for the Rookie of the Year.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, I would like to offer my congratulations to Kendall, and I know your father must be very proud of you.
Buddy, I want to tell you something right now. This family never takes anything for granted. From Dusty Rhodes to Barry to Kendall, nobody rests on their laurels, and everybody has to earn it. So,
hey, this buddy, he's got my belt.
It's my belt.
Hey, wait a minute. I think just a week ago we saw Kevin Sullivan and Barry that belt. Oh, my God. Oh, no, he just... Did you... This is completely getting out of hand. Let me go back to Gordon Solie at the desk.
This is absolutely deplorable.
Say it, somebody, Colt! Sullivan, you can be sure of one thing. I can't save everybody in this world, but you and that maniac group of yours, I can certainly have a hand in destroying them, whether it's in Lakeland, whether it's in L.A., or whether it's in San Francisco, it makes no difference. But you have been a bitter guy like you've never been. Kendall, come here. And as far as that belt being resolved, the family's going to come in. We're going to resolve that point, too. Brother, I'm hot, and I'm ready to go. Just get in that barbed wire. Just get in that cage. Just get anywhere because, Kevin Sullivan, you're going to be something of the past.
Well, I'll tell you, Blackjack Mulligan, he has put him out of business all around the country. So, Kevin Sullivan, Bob Roop, you better beware. We'll be right back.
Well, I'll tell you what. In a moment, we're going to have our missing children's bulletin. But before we do that, I'd like to make, if I may, sort of an editorial comment. But I'll tell you the truth, buddy. This man, Kevin Sullivan, something's... Pardon me just a minute. Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Fair enough. Okay, thank you. Well, I was just going to say something has to be done. Something has just been done. Championship Wrestling from Florida has just suspended Kevin Sullivan from competing on television. Kevin Sullivan, Bob Roop are suspended from competing on television for the next 30 days. That is going to cost them. There's no question about that. That is no more competition here on television for those two for the next 30 days. He really pressured down with that chancery face lock and utilized those ring ropes. Utilized them and yet broke the hold before the count of five. And that's very interesting because...
first of all, Gordon Sully, how old do you think you are? Does Mulligan think he is? And who does Florida Championship Wrestling think they are suspending me? And they said Bob Roop. First of all, there's no Bob Roop. He does not exist. It's Mayor Singh. You are depriving me of a livelihood.
My friend, after what you did.
After I did what?
When you struck that woman, that is... If you hit a competitor, hey, that's one thing, Mr. Sullivan. You don't strike anybody like that.
What do you mean? There's no reason I should have been suspended. Show me why I should have.
I'm going to show you exactly why you're suspended. This is just the last. This was the straw that broke the camel's back, as far as I'm concerned. Now, you take a look at this. Now, she was merely trying to restrain the situation here. And look at that. You think that's funny?
Let me tell you something, Mr. Soli. Every woman that I've ever been involved with knows me. You step in the ring with me, you put your hand on me, I don't care if you wear a dress or if you pull on tights. They're all the same to me. Yeah, I've slapped women before. So what? And let me tell you something, Mulligan. You get that kid, you get that Indian, you get Mike Graham, who's made me what I am today, whether it's Lakeland, Orlando, Daytona on the beach, you name it, or Tampa, and I'll tell you one thing. Mulligan, you think I slapped a broad hard when I get the kid in that ring, this time with Mayor Singh, whether it's a barbed wire match, and you're supposed to be the king of the wire. But when Abudadeen took me down the Hall of Memories, Mulligan, he showed me something. The weak spot that you have has always been your children. You're a concerned parent. You don't want to see your child hurt, Mulligan. Well, your fears and your dreams are going to turn into a nightmare because Abudadeen has told me I'm going to hurt that kid real bad.
Well, we have seen the last of Kevin Sullivan and Bob Roop competing on television. That is for sure. They want to do in the arenas around the state. Blackjack Mulligan wants to get even just as badly as anybody. That's all the time we have this week. Till next week. So long.
Let's talk about the topic at hand. Let's talk about championship wrestling from Florida. Let's go all the way back to 1972, believe it or not. I know you made a big waves in the 80s there, but you actually started out there in 1972. How the hell did you make your way all the way out to Eddie Graham's championship wrestling for, or excuse me, championship wrestling for Florida in 1972?
I had told you I started Montreal at when there was two territories back then in Montreal, two companies rather. It was the Rougeaus, one company, and Mad Dog had the other company. But there was his name was Pat Girard. He wrestled as Pat Curry in Europe and in Canada. He was in, when he was in England, he had a Rolls Royce take him to his events. He was so over in England that he would work, and this isn't a mistake, he worked in London 10 times a week minimum. He worked twice a night some nights to make it to 10. And he had trained a bunch of people. He had trained Ronnie Garvin. He had trained Gilf Pizon. He had trained Terry Garvin. He had trained Pat Patterson. He Martels, anybody. He helped Carpentier when Carpentier first came to Canada. So I started working for him, and then I was working in Brooklyn, 234 Broadway, in Williamsburg, upstairs. I was the only angle in the gym at the time. And what happened was, Ramon Perez was going down to West Virginia, when West Virginia was a territory, the Madrid brothers, Jan and Jill Madrid. They owned the territory. And I went down there and I started working for them. And then I ended up working for Dutch Mantel's brother in South Carolina. They had TV there, a local TV. And then from there, I ended up going to Florida. One of the guys that worked Florida, Johnny Heidelberg, called and got me booked, and I ended up going to Florida. It was fluky how I got there.
When you look at it, is that the place you wanted to be? Did you think that it would fit you well? Like, what did you think when you got there?
Well, I was brand new. I was hoping. Just, I didn't care where they put me. They could have put me on Ragnar, Tibet. I was going to go. I wanted to be in the wrestling business. And it was an opening, and I made the most of it, I think, and I was lucky.
When you look at championship wrestling from Florida, was it like the place where guys wanted to go? I mean, were people excited about championship wrestling for Florida?
Oh, yeah. It was, first of all, Eddie Graham bought in there in 1960, end of 60 or beginning of 61. Eddie, I just realized this. Yesterday I was reading one of the books on pro wrestling by, what's his name? I'll get hold on.
Kevin's getting the book.
Hornbaker. Tim Hornbaker.
Oh, yes. I know Timmy. Yep.
Yeah. And, this is the third Madison Square Garden we got now, right?
Yes.
The second one, and that going back to, I think it closed in 68. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was 68. That Eddie Graham and Dr. Jerry Graham and Rocca and Perez had the largest house in the history of that building. So Eddie had learned, how to book, because he was actually the unofficial booker for Vince. And everybody knew how smart Eddie was, so guys wanted to go down there. The territory, until Eddie got there, had just been a winter territory. They didn't run in the summer, which was crazy, because when I was down there, the summer was our best time. And, he had great talent. He brought in his friends, Johnny Valentine. He brought in Mark Lewin and Don Curtis. He brought in, by that time, Eddie was very influential with the NWA. He would bring the Lou Thesz, and him were very good friends. Lou would come in. Dory Funk Sr. and Eddie were dear friends. He'd bring them in. So it was a hot spot until the very end.
So what did you think about Eddie Graham when you first met him?
The first time I met him, he looked like a star. Blonde hair, big shoulders, not a giant in height, but he had something special. Sharp dresser, could do anything. And the first night I was in Tampa, Tampa was one of the few dress rooms that we all dressed together. And you would hear guys that you get there, you'd be there on time or before the time you were supposed to be there. And everybody would be talking to one another. When Eddie walked in and gave a finish, it was like guys were studying to go to college. You know, I remember people going up to another guy to say something, and the guy put his hand, no, I got to go over this finish. It was intense. He was, I told you that story where he laid out a finish, and I explained it to you how long it was. It was probably about a three-minute finish. And during the finish, in the middle of the finish, there was supposed to be three drop kicks, along with head scissors, monkey flips, dive off the top rope for a crossbody, get knocked out of the ring. It was a continuous finish. And I feel proud of myself when I walked up. I said, "Hey, boss, what'd you think?" He said, "Where was the third drop kick?" I mean, and he gave 8 or 9 finishes that night. So he was pretty amazing. And he was very well respected. Very well respected.
Did he like you, though, like off the bat?
I think so, because he invited me to go to Hiro Matsuda's gym and wrestle Mike Amateur. Yeah.
So did he take you under his wing right away, or that happens later on, like as far as learning the business?
I think what happened was I was supposed to – how I got there was – Robert Fuller and I were tag team partners in Nick Goulas's territory and Robert's grandfather, Welsh, you know, Roy Welsh. And Robert and I were supposed to go to Australia together when Barnett owned it as a young tag team. But right then, Jim, I believe, sold it to Tony Kalani. No, what happened was, I get it now. Robert and I were supposed to go to Australia because his father was...
You were saying move Australia and yeah. Flying?
Yeah, we were supposed to go out to Australia. And Jim ended up buying part of Florida. So his father and Eddie didn't go to Australia. They went for a short period, and they saw that it wasn't going to work. So they redirected me to Robert to Florida. And when I got down there, Eddie watched me work, and I guess I was pretty solid for being so green. And Mike had just started, and Mike and I were the same size, just about. Mike had been a powerlifter. I had been powerlifting. So Eddie, I think this, you know, he was going to do what he wanted. But I think he went to Robert's father, Buddy, and said, "Hey, you know, why don't we put Ronald and Robert together and Kevin and Mike together, maybe we can get two babyface teams over rather than one." So that's what happened.
So when you start really, you know, wrestling down there and you're working for Championship Wrestling for Florida, who are some of the guys when you first started that you worked with? I know Buddy Colt is down there, and I think even Sputnik Monroe is down there, but who are some of the guys that you were working with?
Paul Jones. You know, number one, Paul Jones. They did Bob Roop was there. He had just come off the Olympics, you know, prior. What was it? What Olympics was Bob in, the 68?
I think so, yeah, right? It was 19.
Mexico City.
Yep.
Yeah, so he was just coming out of the Olympics, and Bob was in fabulous shape then. Malenko had turned babyface you know, a couple of years prior to that. So he was, you know, a homesteader, they used to call him. You know, he had his house there, and he was, you know, once you buy a house, they used to get very nervous that you could run into somebody that had some money and maybe run opposition. But, and we had Dickie Slater, Austin Idol, great group of guys that came out of there. Idol, Slater, Paul Orndorff, Ricky Steamboat, who ended up going to Vern, but I think I mentioned this. You know, Ricky Steamboat, when he was a sophomore in high school, got to the finals state wrestling tournament in Florida. He lost to a senior. That senior was Mike Graham.
Wow. I think you mentioned it before. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, you know, the group of young men they put out, you know, and got in the wrestling business was, I think, just about as good as any. Well, hey, they got Hogan in the business, right?
Right.
When, yep. After they broke his leg or ankle.
Yep.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, you know, Eddie had donated, I think it was $50,000 to put a amateur wrestling room at the University of Tampa. Until that time, they had just, you know, pull mats. Eddie had designed a room. He gave scholarships, and not just for University of Tampa. He would have the United States Championship, Amateur Wrestling Championship, were in Florida because of Eddie. Eddie paid for everything. So he had a very, very high profile in Florida doing great things for people.
When you look at Mike Graham, what was your relationship with Mike? Because I know they put you guys in a tag team. You win the tag titles together very early on. What was the relationship like with Mike? Did you guys hit it off right away?
Yeah. Mike really helped me a lot. I mean, I do things now that I had never done really. First time was with Mike, like diving. And Eddie used to take me and Mike fishing all through the Caribbean, and I had never dove in Boston, you know what I mean? Too cold, but I learned to dive there, got my scuba license. Just, it was like, you know, when the Wizard of Oz, when it goes from black and white to color.
Yep.
That's what it was like when I got to Florida after leaving Boston. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't leave Boston because our manor burnt down and we lost all our horses. You know what I mean? So it was quite eye-opening. You know what I mean? Getting there. I got there in January, too. And you get there, and you look around, and you're flying in, and you see all these swimming pools, and the sun, and the coconut trees. So it was really a wonderful experience, first time I went to Florida. I guess I'll always have a very, very soft spot for Florida. I really like Florida.
When you left and kind of came back, like, why do you leave? Why do you come back? Is that one of those things where it's like typical territory stuff? Hey, yeah. I'm going to work there in 72, 73, 74, you know, but then I'm going to leave for a while and then come back and basically maybe a little bit of 75, but really you come back in 77. Is that one of the things where it's just typical territory wrestling? You just go leave the territory and come back and kind of, you know, get rejuvenated, if you will.
I made two huge mistakes back to back. I had the 2-year run there. And, you know, that was a territory where every night was the same. You know, Monday was West Palm. Tuesday was Tampa off Fort Myers. Wednesday was Miami. Thursday was Jacksonville. Friday was Fort Lauderdale or Tallahassee. Both small towns. And then Saturday was either Daytona, St. Pete, Lakeland, or Sarasota. And they were big clubs, right? We have great cards. And then Sunday was Orlando. So you go in those towns week in, week out, week in, week out. So it got to a point where, you know, they said to me, Watts is very high on you. You know, I'm so dumb, I don't even realize what they're saying. You know, it's going, oh, that's nice. It's going over my head a couple of weeks later. You know, Bill called and he wants you to go in for a shot. Oh, that's cool. So then it finally dawns on me what's happening. And I got booked in Calgary. Rather than going a couple of states over, I ended up driving from Tampa to Calgary.
Oh, geez, that's a long drive.
Yeah. And I got there in the middle of the winter. It was just the experience I had there was good, but it was just such a change. Middle of the winter, really exceptionally long trips, dangerous on the road, was gone all the time. And, you know, they had said to me, you know, and I should have, I guess I was ignorant. I should have, they were nice enough to get me, because I met with Watts one day too. They had me come to the office. Bill was in town. He said, hey, we got, that's when I told him I had booked myself in Calgary. And, they said, we really want you to come to Louisiana, blah, 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 we got plans. They started, I said, well, sorry, I'm booked already. Well, I could see it on Eddie's face, like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
And I stayed, I guess, 6 weeks in Calgary. I drove back to Boston. And then they got me, Eddie got me booked in North Carolina. And yeah, so I worked in North Carolina. And after that, I did the same mistake again. I was, that Johnny Heddleman that I told you earlier sent me to Vince Sr. I was the first guy that was from there that didn't start out there that I know of. I've been in the business almost 6 years. I get booked there, and I really never realized how well I did there until I was looking at one of those books where it has all the records of the matches. I was with Andre as his partner at least 40 times. I was, you wow. know, and the other thing was, I was always in a good spot on in the garden. I would put the guy over that was going to work with Bruno next, whether it's Hanson or Brody, and then the following shows, I'd get a win. I'd be tag team with Calhoun, and we worked against the Executioners, Stud and Kowalski, and we worked at DQ, so he treated me really good. So, you know, in that position, I should have been able to, at most, 8 months. Well, I was here 15, and the foolish thing, I was at TV, and Vince came up, Senior came up to me and said, "Kevin, you've really done a great job here. I'd like to appreciate it." I said, "Well, I appreciate it." And he said, "I want you to do me a favor." I said, "Sure." He said, "You need to find a place to go, but I don't care if it takes you another 6-8 months. He said, "You're always welcome here, but I don't want to start having to beat you." Yeah, he said, "I want to make it easy for you to come back here." So I thought, okay. I go at night and call Mike. I don't want to be a burden, you know what I mean? I don't want to have to see him and see him say, "You got a place yet," right?
Yep.
So I call Mike. Mike says, "Let me look at the book." And he said, "I'll call you back in an hour." Called me back in an hour and said, "Yeah." He said, "We're going to," and Slater at the time, you know, Dickie had been a heel baby face. He said, "We're sending Dickie to Atlanta with Bob Orton," he said, "and we'll be like a tag team." He said, "Why don't you come back and we'll put you and me together and we'll decide what to do." I said, "Okay." 2 days later, Vince calls me and says, "I want you to do me a favor." Same line. I said, "Oh, what?" He said, "I want you to go to L.A. for LaBelle." He said, "You're going to be on my payroll, and whatever you make extra for LaBelle is extra." I said, "Vince, I just got myself booked in Florida." He said, "Well, do you want me to call Eddie? Do you want to call him or Mike? And I'll get you out of it." I said, "Well, I really want to go home for a while." Brother, I got to Florida. Mike stopped working. And I had no really position there. Hmm. And like, hey, it looked like I was ungrateful, I think. And it was just one of those things. I was ignorant.
Right. You
know? I just didn't know. But I should have learned on the first lesson. You know what I mean? And, I mean, but I believe that shit happens for a reason. I never would have done what I did if it didn't work out the other way. But I always liked L.A. When I was a kid, I ran away to L.A., to Santa Monica for a month, you know? So, And, but it looked to me as, and I learned that instantly, it looked to me like I didn't give a shit, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And that wasn't the way I wanted them to take it, because Senior was very good to me. I'll tell you a real quick story. They had, when I was there, they really had two ends. They had the New England, Boston end, and then they had the Pennsylvania, New Jersey end. And you know how I told you about the book, Vince's book, how I learned, right? About booking?
Yep.
So one time I'm in Boston end that for a week, and it ends up Boston Garden on a Saturday night. But I look, and Thursday, I'm in like, I think I was in, what's the southernmost town they used to run? Was that York, Pennsylvania? In Pennsylvania. Was it York?
Maybe, yeah.
That's a long way away south, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, there was a town running in Boston, like 15 minutes from my house. So I went to Vince and I said, and I was in a middle position on that card, you know what I mean? It was that kind of time when Vince would put his guys that were leaving that were great, like Sparisario on, guys like in that ink that had Russell Bruno. and yep. give them, you know, make sure they got good pass. So I went to him and I said, Vince, I always appreciate what you do for me, but I'm in York and I could be in Arlington, which is 10 minutes from my house. He said, oh, okay. He said, are you in the same position on the card? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, okay, and if you're not, I'll look, make sure that you get taken care of the same. And we're, now we're talking, what, $30, $40, but that was big back then, right?
Yeah.
And he changed the card. He did it for me a couple of times, you know, so where I'm going with this is for what I did and stuck him in my, it looked like I stuck him up, but it wasn't that I stuck him up. It was just plain being dumb.
When you kind of cement yourself back in the 80s to Championship Wrestling Florida, obviously after the WWF days with Vince McMahon, you're back with Eddie Graham. And I guess it would be around 1982-ish, right? You turn heel and you turn into the devil. Where did that come from? How did that come about? Like, just tell us about kind of you really kind of, you know, going to the dark side, if you will.
What happened was I turned heel in Georgia on, I don't know if it was Steve Kern first or Tony Atlas first. But Tony and I had been the World Tag Team Champions there, and I turned on them. And we actually made the news because that's the year we boycotted the Olympics. And it was on NBC News with Jane Kennedy, and she said, the United States won tonight, the gold medal, and showed it. But I turned heel on Tony, and I also turned heel on Steve Kern. So Jerry Jarrett and Jim Barnett were very close. They came down, and Jarrett made a trade. I forget who he sent for us, but he sent me and Kern up there, and I forget who. I think he sent Buzz Sawyer down and somebody else. And so Kern and I went up there, and I started working heel. And again, I think I screwed up. I said, oh, I'm going to Knoxville. I should have. I was having a very good run there. I was working with Lawler or Dundee, or me and Honky were against Lawler and Dundee. So I just, the trips sometimes got me too. They had long trips. So I went to Knoxville. Blackjack gave me the book and I was a heel. So when I got ready to go, Jack sold Knoxville to Barnett, and Jack and Barry ended up going to Florida. And Dusty was making shots in Georgia when I was there. And Dusty said, hey, why don't you come back? Because I was a heel at that point. And I said, yeah. And he said, what kind of angle can we do? And he wanted me to do something with Mike. And I came up with the idea of being the babyface split, that half the babyfaces trusted me, half the babyfaces hated me. And we went from there. And that's, it kind of just progressed because of MTV, you know, the Michael Jackson Thriller video, Billy Idol, the horror movies, the genre was exploding again. You know, you got to remember that was all the remakes of The Wolfman, Dracula, Alien, you know, Michael Myers movies, all of them exploded. So I kind of got that and mixed it up. And then, you know, punk rock was out and heavy metal was out. So I kind of blended it all together. That's how I kind of got that idea.
Did you really believe in the devil worshiping? Did you really? Because a lot of people think it was very, very real.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about devil worshiping. You know, people that are real devil worshipers don't believe in the devil or God. And, you know, people just come out with things and don't understand things. That's what's wrong right now. The country is so divided because no one wants to stop and listen and maybe go into things and find out the truth. But no, I mean, my cousin, who's like our brother, is a priest. And he used to love the angle. He said, because eventually God wins. And he said, I like the angle. Hmm. And and I never used the word devil. I was using the word Abudadeen.
Yeah, yeah.
Who happens to be a fertility god for the Hindus. And I was talking about things that most people don't understand. I mean, I have some pet peeves. When people don't know where places are, it drives me crazy, I guess because I love geography and history. You know, and they don't know who conquered who, you know. Like Sicily, I loved when I went there because I didn't realize how many people conquered Sicily. You know, even the Irish conquered Sicily, and they were real barbarians. You know, I didn't realize they had a feudal navy. And so I like to find out about places. But I'd like to have some knowledge, and I don't want to spout out things that I don't know anything about. And I think that's where I had hit it on that, where they said, oh, he's devilish. He's talking to the devil, Abudadeen, and the inside jokes on them, you know what I mean? And then yeah. It was things where I used to do with an MVP brought this up to me. When he was a kid, he used to, you know, he's from Florida, and he's doing a magnificent job. Kudos to him. But his father was a Mason, and Gordon was a Mason. They have the ring, and I'd always say, I'd let words escape like, they're always working. It will never be finished. You're a wise man from the East. And MVP told me he would understand some of his father's writings because he's a Mason. And he said he thought I was really, really bizarre and that I was in some kind of Illuminati. He didn't think devil worship, but he thought some kind of Illuminati because I knew about the East.
It's funny, like if you look at the Prince of Darkness and doing that stuff, a lot of people thought that you were highly invested in like being like that because they said they'd see around town like that and like this guy's really nuts, this guy's really crazy. So as far as like you being small in stature, as far as height wise, it didn't work as far as people not being intimidated by you. They still were scared of you because they thought the Prince of Darkness was real.
Yeah, and the other thing is I thought that was something that I had to really convince myself that if I didn't stay in script like MJF is now,
mm-hmm. Yep.
And kudos to him, that I'm talking about this weird stuff. My face is painted. I got bones around my neck. So where am I going to go? They're going to send me out on a Sunday afternoon at one of the local water holes, and I got a polo shirt on and a pair of shorts and sneakers. I couldn't. It would just have killed it. And people would have thought, that's all bullshit. And I just wanted them to buy it. And I was lucky enough, I believe, that I did it that way, that I got quite a long run out of it in different territories. Then I expanded. I was lucky I expanded into different territories because there was a while I would work in Florida maybe once every 3 months in Miami or Fort Lauderdale because I was living in the Bahamas. And then I was working in Puerto Rico and I was working in San Antonio for Luke. I like to just say, Luke just lost Butch.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, they were wonderful, wonderful guys. I had a very, I always had a very great relationship with both of them. Butch was a extremely, extremely talented guy. You know, he worked on his... Can you imagine walking on the side of your ankles for 8 years? That's what he almost died from one time. He had septic so bad. He had broken his ankles and never got them fixed. So, you know, turn your feet where you're on the side of your foot. He walked like that for 8 years. They said that he had it so bad when he passed out. He had septic through his body. This is about 15 years ago. That when they cut it open, it was like crazy glue came out and it stunk. He was a very tough, tough guy, but wonderful. But I was working for them, Southwest, Puerto Rico, and Savoli. So because of that gimmick, got me a chance to expand and go different places.
And not only that, I mean, you basically created an army of darkness. You had the Prince of Darkness was yourself, but you had the army of darkness. You had Mark Lewin, who was the Purple Haze, Mike Davis, Bob Roop, Locke. You had Luna Vachon. You eventually had the Fallen Angel, who was Woman. I mean, you guys obviously had big time feuds with Barry Windham, Blackjack Mulligan, and Dusty Rhodes. Of course, would be, you know, the end all be all would be the big feud. But man, you created a faction there, and it's funny that, you know, everybody was scared shitless of all these guys.
Yeah, and we had Curtis too, you know, King Curtis, my fave. So we did well. I mean, and we had great baby faces to work with. I think the only guy that ever turned on us was superstar Billy Graham. And here we're wrestling superstar Billy Graham, you know what I mean? He did those great promos. Did you ever see them? Were they just still shots? He went in the desert and he voiced over them?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he was great, superstar. And, you know, like you said about the difference in size, when we did this angle, I was wondering, because Billy had come back from the just about from the dead. Now he looks like the old superstar, the WWF champion. I'm thinking, wow, the people going to buy this. After we did the angle, the first time we went back to was Lakeland, you know, and we did great business, and Billy sold for me like a king, and I had a great run with Billy. And I thought, you know, I had been in New York when he was the champion, and I'm saying to myself, wow, how time changes your life, you know what I mean? I was, you know, just starting really in New York, and I had been you know, and I guess in the middle of the card, and he was the champion. Now I'm getting to work with him. It was great.
That is amazing, too, being able to work with not only Dusty, but superstar Billy Graham as well. And I know we'll talk more about Dusty on a future episode, just separately, Dusty and the feud and everything, because I don't want to get too into it with him, because then we'd be talking forever about Dusty.
Right.
But it's one of the things, is that the biggest feud you had in Florida, because Dusty was the most over guy in Florida, obviously a god of wrestling. You think that was the tippy top for you? I know NWA Florida champion is big, but the feud with Dusty probably was the tops for you in the territory, right?
Yeah, and then we had so many angles that worked so good that they just were home runs. And it was because of Dusty. You know, I maybe I get 20% credit, but it was Dusty, the way he sold, the way he made it, did interviews, bringing Blackjack or Barry in at the right situation, or bringing Andre in. Super Slaughter Sunday was right after the Super Bowl, you know what I mean? They brought Dusty and Andre against me and Dusty. I mean, me and Mark against Dusty and the Giant, you know what I mean? It was like they advertised it, Super Slaughter Sunday, like we were going to get killed. Dusty was a genius.
When you look at the territory, is that your favorite place you ever worked?
Here's the thing. Yes, but one of the places nobody ever talks about where I worked was I probably drew bigger money than I even did in Florida. when I was in San Francisco, I had the inevitable task of following Ray Stevens and Pat Patterson. But Bob Rupert and I did this angle with my father, my legit father, and Rupert's shoulder broke my father in the car palace. And you know who Dr. Mike Dano is?
Doesn't sound that familiar.
Okay. I saw him at these conventions. Yeah, he's from San Francisco, and he reminded me. We were drawing 12,000 to 14,000 people, me and Roop. And we had a great card underneath it, but I had a wonderful time there. I actually went back to college while I was wrestling because the trips were so short. I only took two classes, but it was good. I went back to college, and it was a beautiful place to live back then, San Francisco. I lived in Fremont, which is about 30 miles outside of San Francisco, but I'd go into the city and the fabulous restaurants, and I really like San Francisco.
When you look back at Championship Wrestling Florida, what's the kind of legacy? Because I know obviously Eddie's death played a huge role. I mean, he kills himself, and you think that's kind of just, you got to tie that into the legacy of Florida, right, of the territory?
Yeah, it was like a pall came over the state of Florida. I mean, it ended up, you know, like, it was like that song about Camelot. It was so perfect, and then it just felt horrible ashes. It was a tough, tough thing.
When that happened, that's basically the beginning of the end, right?
It was the end. It was the end. And I, about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, I saw Mike's daughter. And I was there when she was born. She was just a little, cute little kid. Her name is Nicole. Well, her grandfather, her father, her brother, her great-grandfather, and her uncle all killed themselves.
Oh, my God.
So let's start again. It's the great-grandfather, Eddie's dad, Eddie, Mike, Stephen the brother. Then Eddie's brother just in the last couple of years killed himself. He had cancer, which might have been the problem, but I said to Steve Kerr when I was talking to him about this, can you imagine how uneasy it must be for Nicole, who's Mike's daughter, when she leaves the room for her child? I mean, that could play in your head, right? If your mother ever gets depressed and you look at what happened in your family, I mean, that's so far from a normal routine. The great-grandfather, grandfather, father, son, uncle, that's five.
Crazy, yeah. That's nuts.
Yeah.
I've heard it could be like a gene, which I've never heard before, but I heard somebody, I think maybe it was Conan, was saying that it's a gene in within the family, but I don't know, very weird that it happened that often.
Yeah, I've read that gene. And then I also read that they have a theory now that, like, if you get your head really damaged, that you have a tendency for your whole personality change. You maybe have enough personality, but then when you hit your head really bad, you get a change of personalities. They said that's Roseanne Barr. It was in a horrific car accident, change of personality. Meatloaf. Think about this one. He was on the he was a track star, right? But he threw the shot put and javelin and, you know, the field stuff. Someone threw a shot put like 35 feet practicing, and he was running around. It hit him in the head. It almost killed him. And his personality supposedly changed. But, you know, the football players from the trauma of the head, there's a lot of them that commit suicide. So, it's, hey, life's tough. And, you know, shit happens that makes it tougher. You know, only strong survive.
Yep.
Yeah.
So great territory, but a horrible end. Even though the you've had, you know, many success, or much success from that territory, many years of success there. Obviously, it kind of all ends pretty bad, considering it was once great, flourishing, money driven territory for sure.
Yeah, it was like if you put everybody that ever worked there in a room and asked them if that was how it was going to end, they'd laugh you out of the building.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. But we'll talk about Dusty another day. We'll go all in-depth in a full episode on Dusty weeks down the road, of course. But let's hit the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at 2-Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Kevin, what do you got?
I'm in the Comic-Con at the Indianapolis this weekend. I'll be there Friday and Saturday, and come out and see me.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. See you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. See you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the 2-Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at 2-Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. 2-Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.
November 25th, 1982, in front of a jam crowd, a capacity crowd at the Bayfront Center, St. Petersburg, Christmas Day night, in a steel cage. Loser leaves town, a lights-out match outside the sanction of the NWA that Kevin Sullivan and the American Dream met. The loser to leave the state of Florida for 60 days. Let's take a look at the closing moments of this match. Alright, there you can see Dusty Rhodes at this point in time, completely in command of the situation. Now look at Kevin, look at Kevin Sullivan, and it appeared that doing something to his tights, suddenly clocked Dusty Rhodes, and again, you notice, it's impossible to tell from this camera angle exactly what was occurring there. But Rhodes was felled, and now Sullivan quickly taking advantage of this situation. and Rhodes down, and this looks like a very dark moment indeed. However, the treachery that we're about to see rivals that of Julius Caesar and Brutus. There's no question about it in my mind. You're going to see what I'm talking about in just a moment, as Kevin Sullivan does everything within his power to put Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, down and out for the count of three. And each time, as it becomes unbearably close, it's Rhodes who reaches down deep inside of himself and pulls up that last vestige of courage to bring himself to his feet and then disconsolately begin to fight back against the forces that surround this man, Kevin Sullivan. And now watch him as he catches Kevin Sullivan coming off the ropes. Rhodes again beginning to feel the power surging through his body. And now watch this arrival of Santa Claus. An ersatz Santa Claus, and it certainly appeared that something transferred there, and suddenly you could now watch Rhodes suddenly dropped in his tracks. And just no telling exactly what it was. There's no telling, but it has Rhodes completely out. And there was no percussion to Rhodes' head. There was nothing. And now you see this ersatz Santa Claus and Kevin Sullivan disappearing from the scene together. It is obvious that his arrival at ringside was not coincidental, taking advantage over the fact that there were several Santa Clauses there. A situation, well, as you can see now, the concern and the consternation of all of the people who are filling the ring, trying to find out exactly what fell to Dusty Rhodes in the manner in which it did. Well, the cameras followed Kevin Sullivan and this erstwhile Santa Claus back to the dressing room. And, well, what we're going to see right now is totally self-explanatory. Let's take a look. I don't think I have to say anything further about that whatsoever. I don't know how low some people can go, but I will say this, that certainly one of the most despondent men we've ever seen. We did follow the cameras back. Dusty Rhodes had finally regained consciousness and had these comments in the dressing room immediately after this match.
I don't know what you expect of me, Kevin Sullivan. You know, I guess right now I'm supposed to just lay down and forget about everything that's happened. Let me tell you something. Christmas night is one night you'll never forget in your lifetime. Because as long as I live, there's the American Dream. And as long as there's the American Dream, there's the American way of life, Kevin Sullivan. I'm embarrassed for my family, for my children, and for the millions, not thousands, but millions of people that love Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, across this country. 60 days. You got to wait, lie, think, run it through your mind for 60 days. And just when you start to feeling good about it, just when you start to reach down in your soul and think it's all over, so let me go. Because I will not let this pass. I will not let this pass 60 days now. I got to find another means of support in the state of Florida. And you remember this night, the 25th of December, 1982. And you mark it down in your books and your history as the night you beat the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and embarrassed him and his family and his children. And never forget that just when you think it's all over, Daddy, it's only begun.
So you think the battle is over?
Let me tell you this. I told you the final chapter would be written in the Bayfront. And the final chapter shows that reality stripped Dusty. Dusty Rhodes of the American dream and showed that he's nothing but a human being.
All I'm going to tell you, it's not over. You may have a 60-day reprieve, and that's all. We'll be back.
College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We love the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and the family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.